At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help. So you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Vote fascist for the third glorious decade of total law enforcement.
How long have you known the plaintiff?
I haven't actually seen it, but I have seen the firm, and I'm planning on renting the Pelican Booth.
I must declare a mistrial, which is a term I've heard people use in the movies. Tap, tap, tap. Case ended.
I got the shotgun. Got the briefcase. It's on the game, though, right?
Judge gave me two ankle bracelets. Said it was the first time he ever had to do that. Your boy's a question on the bar exam. You heard?
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 543. I'm Thomas. That's Andrew Torres. How are you doing, Andrew?
I am fantastic and extra fantastic for today's episode.
Absolutely. It's always great to have Morgan Stringer on for some pop law. Very excited.
Yeah. Although I am going to learn stuff.
Absolutely. Although it is a super grim topic, so not the most fun, but we're going to be talking about the Astroworld tragedy. There's a lot of law involved in that, given Travis Scott and a lot of the lawsuits happening. So we're going to get the full breakdown with Morgan. Another reminder about Vulgarity for Charity. This is the essentially the Citation Needed crew, which is, of course, the Puzzle in a Thunderstorm plus Cognitive Dissonance guys there. So they do this together, and they're trying to beat last year's goal of 272,000. They're trying to get to 300,000, and that's all for a very good cause, being donated to Modest Needs. If you want the details, go to citationpod.com/vulgarityforcharity with some dashes in there. So tell you what, the link's in the show notes, or Google it or whatever, because it's a great cause, and find out how you can donate and get a fun roast for your donation. It's a lot of fun, and it's a really great effort by all of the folks at Puzzle in a Thunderstorm and Cognitive Dissonance combined. And it's something we've done for a couple years now, and it's always a lot of fun. And more importantly, it helps a ton of people. I know we're both very proud to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Hey, everybody. This is a quick message to let you know that we watched about 7 hours of the Rittenhouse trial. That was the direct and the cross-examination of Kyle Rittenhouse. And we broke it down, sometimes scene for scene, in a way that obviously we just can't do that on the main show. So if you'd like our two-hour lamb, that's Law and Awful Murders this month, head on over to patreon.com/law and subscribe at the $2 or more tier. And you can listen to this before the jury verdict comes out this week. And hey, if you're a student, a single mom, if you're unemployed, if you can't afford $2, send us an email at openarguments@gmail.com and we'll make the audio available to you. And if you can't afford the $2, but you'd, you know, rather not sign up for Patreon, that's fine. We'll continue to break down the law the way we always do on the show. Okay. You know, we're not a paywall. We just wanted to do something really, really special for our patrons, for those who support the show. And I have to tell you, I think if you are, you're going to really, really love the insight on what makes a good witness, how you impeach their testimony, whether this prosecutor is, you know, Mr. Magoo. And I also watched an extra bonus day of the testimony of the lawyer arguments breaking down the lesser included offenses and the jury instructions. And so you get kind of a mini deep dive on that at the end and so much more. We really think you're going to love it. That's patreon.com/law. If you're looking for Law and Awful Movies this month, it is Law and Awful Murders instead. We really think you're going to enjoy it.
All right. Well, with that said, let's hop on with Ace Associate Morgan Stringer and find out what's going on with this Astroworld festival tragedy. Let's get to the bottom of it.
Actually, I was going to stay in my office tonight and work on my law blog.
Of course, the blah, 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 law blog. Wow. You, sir, are a mouthful.
Back on the show is Ace Associate Morgan Stringer with some pop law. How are you doing today, Morgan?
I'm doing all right. I am actually about to head to Oxford and go to College Game Day, so I'm very excited about that.
On that happy note, let's talk about some seriously disturbing news. Travis Scott, that concert, that deadly concert killed now, actually, I think as we're recording, I believe, so it's a ninth person died. Deadly concert. What are the legal questions around here that we want to talk about?
Yes. So I knew as soon as I saw this news kind of unfolding, just scrolling around on Twitter on Friday night, I saw, you know, videos from people who were at the concert, tweets from people who were at the concert about how there was lax security there and things of that nature. So I knew from based on that, that there were going to be lawsuits, especially because, you know, in that there were at the time eight people who were killed and it looked like there was a ninth. As more information trickled out, I knew there was going to be a lawsuit, and I was absolutely correct. On Monday morning, there was a race between personal injury lawyers in Houston to get to that courthouse. There have now been over 20 lawsuits filed related to this Astroworld incident.
Yeah. So who all gets named in lawsuits like that? Travis Scott, you know, the venue, the every... Is it Andrew's typical theory of sue everybody and let God sort it out?
Yes. So, which is also what I was taught in towards. Sue as many people as you can for as much money as you can is what I was taught at Ole Miss Law. Now, and I used to, before I got with Andrew, I was with a personal injury firm. Now, we mostly did defense, but we did a little bit of plaintiff's work too. So I am familiar with this arena a little bit, but, you know, nothing to the degree of suing somebody as famous as Travis Scott. So I guess for some listeners, I will talk about who Travis Scott is exactly and what do we mean when we talk about Astroworld. So Astroworld is an annual music show.
Oh, thank you so much.
I was
going to
say, for some listeners, and Andrew's and Thomas's actually.
Yeah, so...
No one here knows who these people are except you.
Yeah, I thought that might be the case. Astroworld is actually an annual music festival that's hosted by Travis Scott. He is from Houston, so... He does this music festival where he has, you know, a pretty big lineup. This year, actually, it was supposed to be SZA, Tame Impala, Bad Bunny, and actually Earth, Wind, and Fire, who I hope listeners know who that is. Okay, yes. So, and it was Travis Scott, and then he had a surprise appearance with Drake, which we'll get into a little bit here, but... So last year, it was actually canceled because of COVID. So this year, you know, they came back, you know, they limited it to 50,000. Apparently, the arena can't actually hold 200,000. But when tickets went on sale, they sold out in 30 minutes. So Travis Scott is actually hugely popular. His real name is actually Jacques Berman Webster II, but that's not a cool rapper name.
That's not better. Okay, maybe I don't know rap, but that sounds way cooler than Travis Scott. I would have thought that you'd go with that name. Okay, I don't know. It's the reason I'm not a famous rapper, I guess.
Yeah, but he
it's the only reason.
Yeah, it's the only. That's the one thing is I don't have a good name.
Yeah, you got to get the name right, and then you got to get your SoundCloud set up, and I think Thomas could hit it big time. I saw something on Twitter that somebody said, being with a straight man is kind of terrifying because he could decide to be a rapper at any moment. But
substitute that in with podcaster, and I think that also applies.
Oh, that also applies for sure. But yeah, so Travis Scott, a lot of people were saying, you know, had reactions to several of the plaintiffs actually are minors. And so one thing I've seen, you know, people say is, okay, well, while we're kids at this concert. So Travis Scott is actually hugely popular with these audiences. So he had a hit song off his third album called Sicko Mode that he did with Drake. In 2020, he actually gave a virtual performance through Fortnite, which got over 27 million views.
Yeah.
And yeah, Fortnite is obviously like that's marketed towards like younger people and kids.
Yeah.
He also has hits, Highest in the Room and Goosebumps. And he's in a relationship with Kylie Jenner of Kardashian Jenner fame. They actually have one kid together and another on the way, which again, this just proves how there's only like 300 famous people. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, half of them are Kardashians. Like, yeah,
exactly. There's a Kardashian link to every story. Instead of Kevin Bacon, it should be, you know, the Kardashians.
Yeah.
So yeah, Travis Scott, he's very good at branding and collaborating. He actually had his own limited edition McDonald's meal combo, which was the first celebrity endorsed McDonald's meal.
Oh, now I know who you're talking about. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, since Michael Jordan. Yeah, yeah, the Travis Scott meal. Yeah, exactly. You may not know from his music, but you do know of him or have like interacted with like at least one of his products, right? Whether that be Fortnite, the McDonald's meal, the You know, he had a collaboration with Nike. He's had collaborations with Dior. He's very good at this kind of collaboration type deal. So there have actually been past incidents that I think will have also been more talked about as this has kind of unfolded. So Travis Scott kind of has a history of sort of promoting chaos and encouraging his fans to sort of rage, which has kind of brought like the mosh pit scene to the rap performance, which is something that I feel like a lot of people probably hadn't seen before or been familiar with, which, you know, is fine. That happens. It's fine. But, you know, usually 8 people don't end up dead from it. But in 2015, actually at the Lollapalooza Music Festival, he was arrested and charged of disorderly conduct because he told concert attendees to ignore security guards and rush the stage. And he did this again in Northwest Arkansas and was also arrested for it. And he's been sued before by a fan who fell from a balcony who claims it was a crowd rush, which is a crowd surge, which is probably what happened here. And then he ended up being dragged on stage and got pretty severe injuries from that. So there is a history with this kind of thing. And then also at that day of the incident, it was about 2 p.m. And I remember seeing videos. You can see them on Twitter or, you know, online. And there are fans that, I guess they don't have tickets, but they rush through the security gates. And you can see them knocking down the metal detectors, things like that. You see some security guards sort of half-heartedly kind of go after some of these kids, right? And some of them are trying to trip them, but they succeed in catching basically nobody. So this thing was kind of a mess to begin with. And then it just kind of escalated from there.
Let me just, you know, old guy, clarify on crowd, because I know what a mosh pit is, right? Like, and from a legal perspective, the distinction that immediately comes to mind is when you climb into a mosh pit, like, you know what the hell's going on, right? Like, that's people throwing themselves into each other with maximum force, right? And so I could see a legal argument of assumption of risk, right? Like, you know, you climb into an amateur boxing ring, you know someone's about to punch you. You climb into a mosh pit, you know, somebody likely on ecstasy is going to throw themselves at you for the next 5 minutes. The crowd surge, is that like the entire audience? Like, what happened?
Turns out I did a deep dive on this, and I'm going to talk for about 10 minutes. So I did a horrifying deep dive on this. Because this blew my mind. As I think Morgan alluded to, there have been a number of these incidents in the past, and they were not that well understood until, like, they've actually opened up. There's, like, a field of study of, like, crowd dynamics and this kind of thing. And I want to actually really push back on the mosh pit anything. That should be pretty much 0% of the discussion. It turns out it's the most horrifying topic I think I've looked into in a while, but also really interesting, which is that it's basically, they had this expert on the podcast talking about it. And then I went and watched this documentary on, like, one of the worst events of this ever, which was Hillsborough. I don't know if you looked into that,
yes,
Morgan, but yeah, that was in England. It was a soccer match. That was a high death count. It was like 95 or 96 people died in that one. There's an ESPN 30 for 30 on it, and it's grim. It's grim watching. But what blew my mind about that is you see some of the same things happening here, which is people start to blame the victims and start to talk about, mm-hmm, like, what did they do? What did they, and actually, it really comforted me in some ways, because it's good to know that police are shit everywhere. Because in England, the police in charge of the security for the event, immediately after, you know, almost 100 people are dead, they started talking about how, like, oh, the fans were too drunk. They were too rowdy. They were coming in here drinking, and they totally victim blamed. And as it turned out, it was entirely the police's fault for not managing the event correctly. Because, yes, as this scientific expert talked about, which is mind blowing, it's basically, Andrew, what you do is you can basically treat human beings like it's fluid dynamics, you know, like it's just like, well, if you have X number of people and you put them in this certain amount of space and there's nowhere to go, this will just happen. Like, it's almost like you can look at it like not even humans anymore. It's almost like we're a fluid. It's really mind blowing. Huh. Because what happens is if we get, there's too many people, there's some sort of surge, some sort of event that causes people to rush toward one direction. There's a pressure wave that is just like inescapable. Like you squeeze up against each other so much that people can't breathe anymore. People's hearts stop. People get all kinds of gruesome injuries. And it's entirely a question of, did you manage the crowd correctly? And was there an appropriate like pressure outlet? And so it's nothing to do with mosh pits. Like that's not anything. That's yes. not where the anything would happen. Like, yeah, someone could get injured in a mosh pit, but all it takes is inappropriate crowd management. And if there's something that gets everyone's attention, it gets them to either rush a stage or for whatever reason, it gets the crowd acting in a certain way, then that pressure wave, it really just squeezes people to death. It's the most gruesome thing. It's just sheer numbers. Like, did you manage the crowd correctly? Did you have the correct outlets and the correct, like, if you have certain breaks or gating or whatever it is that like breaks up the group so that there's not this risk. It's entirely the fault of the people who should have managed this event properly. And it's not the victim's fault whatsoever. And I hope nobody is left with that impression. That's the biggest takeaway from this like deep dive I went on that was so like depressing, but I couldn't stop reading about it.
Yeah. And I wanted to make that point too. And I'm really glad that you went into that, because I was going to say the most likely cause here is compressive asphyxia, which mm-hmm. I did a deep dive into. And yeah, Thomas, it's very grim. So that is when, again, it's the crowd is so tightly packed that you cannot breathe. One witness said, if you happen to have your arms up, you know, in the air, waving them around like you just don't care while this happened, then your arms were stuck. You could not move them. They were going to stay up. It did not matter what you did.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And it's like a domino effect, right? And it has nothing to do with the mosh pit, but I did want to mention that, you know, because I have seen some people already coming to Travis Scott in the manager's defense saying things like, oh, well, he encourages fans to rage. And that's no excuse, right? Well, we have seen, you know, there have been videos that have gone around that have gone viral, such as from past concerts, such as from Linkin Park, where, you know, he sees some people fall and he says, hey, we need to watch out for each other. We're stopping the show right now. We're going to make sure everybody's okay. And then we're going to play the song again, right? That has happened with multiple artists, everybody mm-hmm. from Adele to Billie Eilish. You know, when somebody falls out, they, you know, stop a show, assess, make sure everything's okay. And some people have said, well, maybe Travis Scott didn't know. There's video that shows that he did know that he was aware of something going on. And he just said, oh, y'all cool, you know, throw your middle fingers up in the air if y'all cool. And then he just continued on and brought Drake out, right? Meanwhile, people are dying.
Well, here's the weird thing, though. So I used to think, do you remember the Pearl Jam one, Andrew, like in the 90s? I know you hate grunge, but there was an incident in a concert there. And I always used to think it was like, oh, someone must fall and then it's like a trampling. But that actually, I believe that isn't really what goes on. Like I always thought that that's what the problem was. And so I actually am wondering how much Travis Scott will be liable here. I think that like when you look at some of these examples of this crowd crush, this like compression thing that happens, it's people get kind of stuck in place. It's entirely possible. I'm not like I don't know Travis Scott. I'm not trying to defend the guy or anything, but you know, when he's got in-ear monitors going, so he can't really hear anything and he's doing his show, it actually doesn't seem that outlandish to me that he would have not necessarily noticed what was happening. And that's just prima facie. I haven't seen like examples of,
that's a good point. Now he did have two security guards come on stage and tell him something. Now I don't know what that communication was. There's no way to know. It could have been something, you know, that had nothing to do with what was happening. And also Houston, the city of Houston was aware, and they actually declared this a mass casualty event, but the show was not ended until about 40 minutes later.
Really?
And, oh, wow. Yes.
So, okay. I want to put a pin in that because I have so many questions to ask about that. But first, I guess I want to sit in the Thomas chair for a minute here and ask the question this way, because the news reports I've seen, so this, I think, kind of responds to both what you were saying, Morgan, and also to the idea of the sort of the crowd crush is a fluid dynamics kind of thing. So this is just, I'm reading, this is admittedly, it's a New York Post article. So I pulled it because it's inflammatory, right? Because I want to get both of your responses to what to me seems to be the kind of like typical Twitter hot take. So here's what the Post says, and this is from the 6th, this is from a couple days ago. It says, videos shot at Travis Scott's Astroworld Festival Friday night appears to show fans desperately trying to get the concert to stop as the crush went on for about a half an hour before the music was stopped, leaving 8 people dead and scores more injured. And Thomas, I think, as you pointed out, there's been a ninth death.
A ninth, died.
Yeah, today. Scott apparently noticed an ambulance moving through the crowd, stopped performing for a few minutes, then promised to, quote, make this mother effing ground shake,
end quote, and resumed the show. It's unclear if he heard any of the crowd's pleas. Another 11-second post starts with a close-up of Houston police officers and medics attending to a fan on the ground while the audio captures a line of Scott's song. Okay, so the salient parts out of that seems to be fans are chanting, stop the show, and that's going on for a long, long time. And it looks as though there's some kind of acknowledgement from the stage, right? And then we're going to make the MFing ground shake or whatever. So I guess my two sort of questions / talking points, and Morgan, you can take it from here, that suggests a little different, right? That there wasn't kind of like a single flashpoint and everything went crazy, but rather, you know, sort of slow build over a half an hour. And also that there was at least some awareness of what's going on Scott's part.
Yeah, so there was, but again, it's like, did he know, you know, that people were literally dying? Did he think it was one fan? Did he know it was eight? You know, did he think somebody had maybe just passed out and the medics had them?
Yeah.
And the thing that I also wanted to point out, and these lawsuits are suing for, you know, gross negligence and negligence. So gross negligence being, you know, you are aware of what's going on and you still go forward, right? So it's a little worse than just negligence. Like, oh yeah, you should have, you know, hired better security. So the Houston police have really made a big show about, you know, oh, well, they hired more security guards for this than they did the World Series. You know, there were 500 police officers on duty that night, and there were, you know, they hired all these security guards. That's great that you hire all these security guards, but did they know what they were doing? Or did you just hire a bunch of 19-year-olds, you know, for $9 an hour? And also one of the witnesses, who she was a woman who actually did pass out, and the fans had to crowd surf some people to areas of safety. So it wasn't just, oh, the fans all let loose and they're a bunch of sociopath monsters. People were trying to help each other. A lot of the media is, you know, obviously trying to victim blame, like you were talking about, Thomas, which I'm really glad you brought up that point about how this has happened throughout history, this kind of victim blaming immediately. And they crowd surfed this woman over, and she, you know, recovered, and she said she was an RN, and the medics asked her for help. And she said some of these medics did not even know how to take a pulse. They were doing CPR on people who did not need CPR, and they were failing to do CPR on people who needed it. So it was very obvious that there was some kind of failure to do some triage. They did not have appropriate precautions. And also, the Houston police made it a point to say, oh, this wasn't overcrowded. This venue could have held 200,000 people, but there's only 50,000 people.
Yeah.
I say, if I'm the plaintiff's attorney, this is my argument. I say that does show negligence, because you should have had an easier time handling that crowd. You should have had some precautions. It's like Thomas was saying, with the fluid dynamics, gating, some kind of pressure valves.
This show is brought to you by Fiverr, and I friggin' love Fiverr. Seriously, this is something that I used long before they were a sponsor. I told you last time about Sam and I on Comedy Shoeshine using Fiverr for one of the greatest comedy bits of our lives that we're always going to treasure. But really, Fiverr is one of the great things about the internet. The idea that you can connect to all these people who might be able to do something that you cannot do. For me, for example, it'd be, I don't know, developing a website or some coding that I don't want to learn for right now, you know, whatever it might be, graphic design, so many things. You can connect with someone who is so good at that thing that they're able to do it in like minutes, and you can hire them at a great rate to do one little thing you want to do. So we all know how hard it is to start something out of nothing. Like, the best time of an idea is when you first think about it, and then you try to bring that idea to real life. Doesn't always go well, but what's really going to help you is Fiverr. With Fiverr, turning that idea into something is easier than ever. Millions of freelancers across the globe help clients turn ideas into successful realities every day. These are experts in data, design, marketing, technology, website building, music, oh, video animation. That's a great one. Hop on Fiverr if you're doing a video, and you can make it even better easily by hiring somebody on Fiverr. You just search for what you need, and you set the timeline and the price you want, and Fiverr will provide a list of freelancers who meet your criteria. You browse their portfolios, read reviews, and know exactly what you will pay before ordering anything. It's a simple-to-use platform with great customer service and qualified freelancers in every field. Every successful something was once nothing. Head to Fiverr.com. That's with two R's. Fiverr.com, and turn nothing into something today. Receive 10% off your first order by using our code OPENING at Fiverr, Fiverr.com. Again, that's Fiverr.com, code OPENING. This show's brought to you by Roman. You know, when the moment for intimacy arrives, you better be ready. You better be Roman ready. Here's the thing. ED is more common than most people think. In fact, 52% of men between the ages 40 and 70 will experience some form of ED. 52, that's a majority. So like, if that happened to you, you're in the majority. The benefits of ED treatment can help you reconnect with your partner and rediscover the joy of sex. Roman Ready is confidence personified. It's the self-assurance that comes from knowing you've prepared yourself for the moment when intimacy arrives. Roman's system is also completely confidential and totally discreet. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for erectile dysfunction, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. And this is a U.S. licensed healthcare professional who will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole thing is straightforward, convenient, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/opening and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a U.S. licensed healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/opening today. And if you're prescribed, get $15 off your first month of ED treatment. Make sure you're ready to have confidence and control this fall. Roman ready. The interesting thing about the Hillsborough incident, the top line number of 50,000 actually doesn't really tell you anything, because that entire casualty event in Hillsborough was in two sections. So there was an area behind the goal, essentially, at the soccer match that was like a gated in area that was like two sections, and they just let too many people into that area. But that's but a fraction of the people who were at the match. So it really doesn't matter that top line number. It matters how many people were shepherded into a given space and like who's allowed to be in this space, how many people are in this dense, you know, so it could be just a pocket, could be where the entire thing is. This is, again, speculation just in general about these kinds of things. Here's my Thomas hot take. If you want a Thomas hot take, I think the focus on Travis Scott is maybe inappropriate. Now, there could be other facts that come to light that would make that more appropriate, like if Travis Scott himself is in charge of like a bunch of stuff. And also the fact that like, if he did encourage a rush to the stage, that kind of thing might just be something that we should not allow anymore. Like that should be looked at as too dangerous, yes, a thing to even allow, like any sort of rush to the stage. But apart from that, as somebody who is a world famous rapper like myself, no, as somebody who's done very, you know, limited amounts of performing and stuff, it cannot be on the performer. Like no matter what it is, I've only done very small crap with theater and whatever, but it cannot be the performer's responsibility. The performer of anything, whatever you're talking about, let alone a giant concert with so many moving parts and loud music and all that stuff, their focus should be on performing. They have a thing they have to do. And I don't know about rap, but like there are performances that take enormous focus, like enormous, like your entire focus, absolutely, is going to be into that performance. This is absolutely not the performer's job. Like, why didn't the lights go up? Why didn't the music just cut off? Why didn't the sound get turned off, like the amps turned off? Like, that's the kind of thing you would need. You would need somebody with the authority who is not in the middle of trying to perform, something that can take in all of your attention. You need somebody who's focused on security, focused on safety, to be able to flip that switch and say, like, there's a major safety situation going on. We have to stop the show. And that, I know it's easy to, you know, look at videos and say like, oh, should Travis Scott have noticed? Well, okay, there's an ambulance. Maybe somebody got dehydrated in the back of the crowd. Like all that, exactly, stuff that you've described is the kind of stuff that I bet happens at every single show. And again, maybe there'll be examples that doesn't hold up on, but from the limited stuff you've said, you know, there's an ambulance. Okay, well, who knows? Maybe an elderly person had a heart attack back there. People, honestly, the show goes on when those things happen. Like that's the truth of performing. Or maybe it's a minor thing. So as far as Travis Scott knows, he's not going to stop the show for that necessarily. And people trying to get his attention, I bet you people are trying to get his attention all day, every day at everything he ever does. He's a famous musician. So putting the focus on him, again, unless there's facts that I don't know about, it seems a little bit inappropriate. And there ought to be, unless he's responsible for not having hired the security or you know, whatever. His manager, I think, would be more likely to be somebody, whoever handles the event, That's where the focus needs to be. The people who should have not only, it's not just hiring security, as you point out, Morgan, it's also having the correct procedures, you know, having training, having all that stuff. Like, that's where the liability ought to be. And I think if we're focusing on what victim blaming, that's bad, but also, like, should this rapper who's in the middle of performing have noticed? I feel like that's maybe not the right place to put this.
Yes, and I agree. And I wanted to get back into sort of the things that Andrew pointed out about the parties, right? So all these lawsuits sue Live Nation.
Good.
They just named Travis Scott as a party, right? And, you know, say, you know, when you do some fact finding, you are going to find more like, what did he know? What are his responsibilities there? And I think you do get into complicated questions of, you know, he does have past behavior of, you know, encouraging fans to ignore security. You know, did that happen here? I don't know yet. But, you know, that's something that we're going to find out. But also, Travis Scott is not wanting to, you know, there's been some hot takes about, oh, he doesn't care about his fans. Yes, he does. They make him tons of money. Like, why would you have this secret? Like there have been, of course, because there's been conspiracies about this, right? That, oh, this was part of some satanic ritual or whatever. I'm like, what does he have to gain from
killing his fans? They always think the Satanists want to kill their own fans. Yeah, they always, why? That's always the theory. Yeah, then they and don't then have any money anymore. Yeah.
And then there's been another crazy conspiracy theory that came out that, again, Thomas, it goes to what you were saying about not trusting the police. The Houston police came out and tried to make it sound like there was some crazy fan out there that was stabbing people with drugs. And that's what made people pass out.
I wanted to ask you about that.
Yes. So there was a, it came from the Houston police that one of their officers was stabbed in the neck with a needle, like on Dune. And he just fell out and he was revived with Narcan. So, you know, somebody was over there, you know, stabbing people with a fentanyl gun, or I don't know. I don't know how they were finding veins on people, because, you know, it's kind of requires that. You don't just stab people randomly in the skin. Yeah. And then they said this, and I was like,
subcutaneous injection of fentanyl.
Yeah. And this was so weird to me. So I was like, well, I don't think brutal this happened.
Stuff. I mean, for one, you only have to, like, come into minor contact with that stuff and you could totally pass out, by the way. But, like, why would that be why would that be happening? Well, is that just a made up thing or what?
Yes, it was made up, because today the Houston police chief said, well, we got some bad information. Actually, this officer was just, you know, trying to, I guess, restrain somebody at the concert, and they ended up getting punched and they passed out. And oh, I was like, but that is a completely different story than I different was stabbed with than, yeah. drugs. Where yeah. did that come from? Yeah. And why did you report it like that? Just say, this is under investigation. We, you know, we're still investigating this and move on. Don't try to, this is you know, incredible. Fuel.
I had no idea there were this many parallels to the Hillsborough situation. Like, honestly, it's again, I don't recommend, it's depressing watching, but if you look into that, the same thing, this was 1989 in England, and the police told the same lie, like the same sort of lies. They talked about how, like, they were overserved. It was a drunk rush of people who ignored the security. And they even, police told lies in that situation. Again, this is Hillsborough, not this current situation, but they told lies about, like, we were trying to revive people and we were, you know, urinated on and kicked out, and just, they made up all this stuff. And that became the story for years, by the way. It wasn't until, like, decades later that finally they set the record straight. We're like, no, this was entirely the police's fault. So don't buy into this crap, everybody. Like, this seems to be the pattern, like making up these wild stories to do anything but put the blame where it ought to be.
Yeah. And I think that we are going to have that. Like, you know, there's going to, I think that these are going to settle. Obviously, I think, Travis Scott has made some moves to, you know, pay funeral costs. He's said that, you know, fans who are in attendance can get a free month of BetterHelp, which has caused some discourse on the Twitter that I'm not going to get into. But, you know, but yeah, there has been some different, you know, hot takes about, oh, this is all Travis Scott's fault, or, oh, this is, you know, there was some crazy person stabbing people with drugs. And I think this is, you know, your classic negligence. I think that Live Nation and Scoremore Productions, they failed to essentially hire competent security. Like, when you have people rushing the gates and your security guards are making, like, half-hearted attempts to sort of stop people, but not really, that tells you something already is going wrong. The fact that they're that incompetent to do that, and then they can't, you know, you have medics that can't tell whether to, you know, how to take a pulse, and they have to ask for assistance from people. It's, yeah, it very obvious here to me.
Yeah, I think those are really critical facts that were not present in the intentionally salacious New York Post story that I read to prep for this. But let me ask the question this way. Suppose you have a situation where a significant chunk of the negligence is going to be laid at the feet of Live Nation, of the event organizers, right? That is failure to appropriately cordon off the space, allowing, you know, too many people into a certain area, having undertrained staff, all of the things that we've just talked about that contribute to the structural factors. How does that interact with the artist-facing factors that we talked about, right? Assume, for example, that there is some evidence that comes out that that Travis Scott, you know, did hear, right? You know, sort of notwithstanding Thomas's public policy prescription of, like, we shouldn't require artists to be listening to the crowd, or we should be skeptical that artists can even hear the crowd. And I think that second point is kind of well taken. But suppose, just as a hypothetical, that the evidence comes out that, yeah, Travis is like, oh yeah, I did. I heard people, you know, chanting, stop the show, but they do that all the time. And, like, this is just kind of what my shows are like. And you know, so when I said, you know, we're going to make some, you know, mother effing noise, that's just, you know, that's just what I do at my shows. Right. And suppose the jury does assess, like, some blame to that. Does this become like a contributory negligence kind of problem where, you know, the victims are going to get something out of Live Nation? Or is it like a joint and several where, you know, the victims will be compensated first and then there'll be subsidiary lawsuits between Live Nation and Travis Scott to kind of figure out who owes what?
So the subsidiary lawsuits, I think those might be a bit out of a question because Texas is actually a modified comparative negligence state. So that means if you are a plaintiff and you are found to be more than 50% at fault for your own injuries, then you do not recover because you're more than half at fault. Yep. So, So I don't think you're going to see subsidiary lawsuits, but I also think that might be why there's a bit of victim blaming going on here, right? Because then you can, you know, but again, that is applied to the plaintiff. The crowd is not the plaintiff. It's, you know, the individuals that are suing, right? So, you know, you can blame the actions of a crowd, but those are other people. You're still on the hook. Now, I think what's going to happen, though, is personal injury, especially when you have these, you know, or any high profile litigation involving celebrities or incidents that get this amount of public attention. You're not just fighting in the courtroom, but you're also fighting in the court of public opinion, right, Andrew? Mm. So it doesn't, you know, we can have these, you know, the Thomas's hot take about how Travis Scott, you know, it should not be on the performer. And I think that that's right. But if everybody's reading this New York Post article and saying, you know, screw that guy, that's still, you know, a battle that you're having to fight. So the best thing to do there would be, you know, essentially to get out your checkbook, honestly. And I think that's what's going to happen here because he does not want to be in litigation with his fans. And I guarantee you he's going to put pressure on Live Nation to not be in litigation with his fans either. And I think that this is also very bad for Live Nation because they're getting a lot of heat for this about why haven't you hired more security or better trained security? You know, they're going to start asking questions. Could this happen again? You know, what could this have been avoided? And the ages of the victims, too, I think are something to account for. I think you have people that were injured and died from the ages of 9. And I think the oldest victim I know that died was 27. 27. Yeah. That is insanely young and tragic and awful. I mean, it's tragic when anybody dies, but especially if you are having, you know, kids die, that's awful. And you do not want that to go to a jury, especially. So they're going to settle. This is going to settle. This is not going to be some trial of a century stuff, but I think it's just going to be, you know, who is getting their checkbook out and for how much. I think there's just going to be the questions here. And then also, I think that there is going to be an investigation. But again, I don't trust the Houston police on this because they've already told us wild tales about, you know, somebody stabbing people with fentanyl. So I don't know where, you know, if we're ever going to really find out exactly what happened until years later or if this is going to unfold quickly. I imagine it. You know, I hope that somebody does a thorough investigation, and that probably is only going to happen through this litigation.
So which lawsuits have been filed already? Yeah, I know you said there was a race to them.
Over 20. Yeah. Over 20.
Yeah. Okay.
So I have read 18 of them. They're very cookie cutter. They have, they're not very specific about the injuries and what happened. And I don't practice in Texas, so I don't know, maybe this is frowned upon. But for me, if I know that there are going to be eyeballs on a complaint that I draft, I'm going to try to, you know, use that to be a little bit more creative in my complaint drafting. So, you know, I'm going to mention things like, you know, plaintiff was a college student whenever, you know, because I used to work in Oxford, I would always throw that in there, right, to get a little bit more of sympathy for a plaintiff in a way. But because especially I know that there's eyes on that, and that that's something that people can empathize with.
Let me ask both of you just as a purely legal question. You talked about the rush to file lawsuits. What exactly is the rush? Is there some, I'm not that I'm saying, you know, you take a year or something, but these are filed immediately. Is there a reason? Is there a legal reason or a practical reason why it's like, we have to get this out there yesterday versus like, okay, let's take a week, let's take a 2 weeks, whatever, and like make sure we draft the thing properly. Is there some pressing need to get it right away? Is it a first come, first served basis or something?
No, I think it's twofold. So I have actually, there's one lawsuit in particular that's very interesting. This is the Villanueva versus ASM Global. That's another one of the vendors at this concert. And they name, of course, you know, everybody you could name, all the vendors, basically. But it actually incorporates a motion for a temporary restraining order in the complaint, saying that they want the judge to grant an injunction specifically against Travis Scott to keep him from deleting video, pictures, emails, and messages, because they're worried, essentially, I guess, that he's going to delete things off of his cell phone. So I thought that was very interesting.
What would be on his cell phone?
Again,
like the prep of the event or something?
Yes, probably prep or, you know, I guess Snapchats that he'd done during the show or something. I'm not sure exactly what they believe that he would have, or maybe messages that he had sent afterwards or right before, you know, I guess to show his level of awareness of what was going on, or thinking that maybe he had some, you know, evidence about, you know, I guess the security that had been hired or things of that nature. But I thought that was very interesting. But yeah, usually what you'd want to do is, I assume that the first thing these attorneys did, and I assume that they have gotten probably hundreds of these litigation hold letters, is, yeah, you send a litigation hold letter basically saying, we anticipate this is going to go to litigation. So basically, don't delete any of your emails. Because a lot of people on Twitter also were very crass about the, oh, y'all were calling personal injury lawyers before the bodies were even cold. You know, this is a money grab. Do you not think Live Nation's first call was to their lawyers? Because if you don't, if you think that their first call wasn't to their legal team as the event was happening, then you're an idiot.
You're totally right. And one of the themes of Andrew's coverage on the show has been the again, it's more victim blaming, as though there's this environment where like, oh, these poor bazillion dollar companies, like they just face too many lawsuits. And when in reality, what happens is they're never punished enough. Sometimes you'll get judgments, and even those judgments will be like reduced by a judge somewhere along the line that doesn't get a bunch of coverage. So yeah, that's an inappropriate attitude. The only way change happens, the only way that, you know, safety protocols might be put in place, if indeed they aren't already, is by having big lawsuits like this. That's the only way to get people to treat this more seriously.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. That, I mean, this is something that has gotten a lot of people's attention, and hopefully it does improve people's hiring of security practices. You know, not that that should be necessarily on the performer, but on whatever company, such as Live Nation or Scoremore, whoever it may be, that is in charge of putting on the concert and in charge of vetting and hiring security and medics and doing things like making sure medics can do CPR, you know, basic things like that, that should have been done instead of just, you know, hiring whoever for, you know, the lowest bottom dollar. And yeah, I think that's what's going to have to happen here.
Hey, this is an ad for Moink. And you know, if Andrew's reading the copy, it's because it mentions their delicious bacon. Everyone knows I'm the carnivore on the show. I love bacon. I've had a lot of seriously awesome top shelf, thick sliced, hardwood smoked, artisanal bacon. And I am not kidding you when I tell you that Moink bacon is literally the best bacon I've ever eaten. The marbling is amazing. It crisps up perfectly. Look, you know I love to cook. You know I love good food. And you know I wouldn't lie to you about anything as important as bacon. But Moink is so much more than bacon. Moink delivers grass-fed and grass-finished beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, and wild-caught Alaskan salmon direct to your door. They work with family farms, not the huge conglomerates that other meat box services work with. So that means that their animals are raised outdoors. Their fish swim wild in the ocean, and Moink meat is free of antibiotics, hormones, and most importantly, like, not loaded up with sugar and injected with water like the stuff that you get at the supermarket. Every bit of meat that I have ordered from Moink has been seriously delicious. I cooked their flash frozen salmon rare unilaterally, crisped the skin. It was fatty and smooth and delicious and just wonderful. Their ground beef made amazing burgers. And what do you know? Right now, the promo is that ground beef. You sign up at moinkbox.com/OA and you get a year of ground beef for free. And then you get to pick whatever meats you want delivered with your first box. You can change it every month. You can cancel anytime. It's really hard to go wrong. Lots of our listeners have thanked us for turning them on to Moink. I want you to join the Moink movement today. I mean, you know, if you eat meat, go to moinkbox.com/OA right now, and you'll get free ground beef for a year. That's a limited time offer, and you'll get 1 year of the best ground beef you'll ever taste. So, moinkbox.com/OA, moinkbox.com/OA. I thought, Morgan, what you said was excellent. And the only thing that I would add, if all of the lawsuits are of the form plaintiff being someone who was injured at the show suing various entities. And I gather from what you're saying that that's the case, that of these 20-some lawsuits, that they all fall into that pattern. In terms of answering Thomas's question of why the race to the courthouse, if you think sometimes the plaintiff and the defendant will race to the courthouse, right? Like, because the defendant will be a plaintiff in a declaratory judgment action. And so the question is, who gets to file first and in what capacity? And sometimes you feel like, you know, you have an advantage to being the plaintiff. And there are some legal advantages to being the plaintiff in terms of courts deferring to your choice of forum. But in a case like this, I suspect the other reason to want to race to the courthouse is that these cases are likely to be consolidated. Like, they all arise out of the same common nucleus of operative facts. And typically, again, not always, but typically one of the factors in consolidation is which case was filed first, right? Mm. And that's the case into which the other cases get consolidated.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And so those are kind of off the top of my head the reasons that I think of for wanting to race to the courthouse. But Morgan, I absolutely love you sort of forcefully giving voice to a point that is just not made even, you know, sort of in typical, you know, left-leaning media sources. And that is, like, we should normalize when people are hurt calling their lawyers,
yeah, right?
Like, that is not a thing that we should be like, oh, well, she done call her lawyer. Like, no, like, it and as you point out, right, the party that inflicted the wrong absolutely has already called their lawyers. So,
yes, absolutely. You know, it's like what you said about consolidation. It's also, I think, about a sort of a strategy of drumming up more clients, right? Because more people who are at this concert are going to start looking for attorneys, right? So if they see one guy is handling 10 of these clients, you know, you might want to join up with that guy, as is the case. A lot of these names repeat, obviously. So it is, in a way, a race to the courthouse for that, to be sort of, again, the face of that for consolidation.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. I think that reflects your prior experiences, and that's really smart. And you're 100% dead on in terms of, you know, establishing early expertise in cases that clients look to. So, all right, what's going to happen next?
I think what we're going to see is, I think facts about this are going to probably slowly trickle out. I know that there's been like a rush of information that came out, and then, you know, it was this a satanic ritual? Was there a guy going crazy stabbing people?
Yes.
And then it was, no, there wasn't. And then now there's, you know, hundreds of victims. And, you know, I feel like every day for a while since the concert happened, you know, we were getting more and more information. And I think the information is going to sort of slow down a little bit, but I think over time, we're going to get more of an understanding understanding of exactly what happened. And I do think that these lawsuits are going to be settled. And I think that essentially, though, I do think that, like Thomas said, perhaps unfairly, Travis Scott is going to continue to take heat for this. I've seen where people have led, you know, sort of boycotts on his on streaming his music on Spotify and things like that, because people are very upset with the way he handled it. And they thought that his apology on Instagram wasn't sufficient enough, or, you know, again, it's like judging how authentic somebody is.
Throw in the caveat that, like, he may be entirely appropriate to blame him for the premeditated behavior of setting it up, or I have no idea. Like, he may be to blame for that. It's merely the, like, the on stage stuff that I think I have, you know, some sympathy for. Like, I'm sure he has people shouting at him all the time, every single concert he does. I mean, that's kind of what people do with celebrities, with major music stars. So, you know, it's tough to be like, oh, we should have heard and specifically known that this crazy thing was happening.
Yes, I agree with that completely. And also, you know, I think it is fair to sort of look at him and sort of criticize, you know, whether his reaction or the lead up, you know, things where he has in the past, you know, encouraged fans to ignore security guards things like that. Like, yeah, that is completely fair criticisms of him. And I think we should have that conversation about maybe artists do need to do more to sort of, you know, encourage your fans to act in a safer manner. Now, not saying that that should be completely on the artist, like you said, Thomas, but I think that what's going to happen here is there's going to obviously have to be some changes, especially in light of, you know, we're kind of I'm aware that we're still in the pandemic, but, you know, as like more events are happening, I think that there needs to be this emphasis on safety, because I do think that people, you know, after you've been in the house, you know, for, I mean, a year and a half, you know, people are wanting to go out and go and do stuff. And I think that we really need to make sure that, yeah, that's cool. And, you know, everybody wants to see their friends and go do fun stuff again. But we need to make sure that we're also, you know, taking care of each other and doing things in a safe way.
Yeah. And honestly, maybe that'll be the story of this. Like, corners were cut due to how bad the last year was for live events. And who knows how many people with expertise, with actual knowledge, maybe they're out of work. Maybe they weren't able to continue. Who knows? Maybe that'll be part of the story, too, is the inavailability of people with actual expertise due to this awful pandemic. I don't know.
Yeah. And just hiring whoever. Because, again, it's, you know, everybody's hiring and people are just like, OK, sure. You know, first person off the street. So I think that's going to be part of this as well. Again, we don't have all the facts before us, but I can tell you, number one, this was not a satanic ritual. Number two, this was not somebody.
Glad we had you on for that.
Yeah. So, and number two, this was not some guy going around stabbing people with fentanyl. This was, like Thomas said, this has happened before. These kind of crowd rushes situation that can be prevented. And we need to keep that in mind, and also keep you know, the victims in mind and not victim blame. And also, if somebody is injured, then don't judge them for calling their lawyer. That's terrible. Stop doing that. I hate it.
Totally. So, lawyers, do we anticipate settlements?
Yes. Yeah. I think we're...
As you said earlier, no trial of the century, probably.
Yeah. No, I don't think... No, nobody... If my client wanted this to go to trial, I would push them downstairs or something, because that... Absolutely not.
Oh, don't take legal advice from Morgan. Yeah.
Notice, Morgan's comments do not reflect the law offices of P. Andrew Torres.
Yeah, no, because I try
we
to
promise
do...
promise we will not push any of our clients down the stairs.
But it's best for them. But no, I would do everything in my power to keep my client from going to trial. If I were a lawyer for Live Nation, I would tell them, contact your insurance company, get out your checkbook, because we are not going to trial on this, because there is going to be a very angry jury.
I really think, as somebody who, you know, did insurance coverage litigation for a decade and a half, and maybe the only person in America that finds that interesting, I think that your prediction of what's going to happen is entirely correct. I think that it will be settled, and then there will be the battle by and among the insureds and their insurance companies as to, you know, whether this was a covered event, whether particular policy exclusions apply. Like, that's really where the money is going to change hands, is between Live Nation and its insurers.
Yeah, I was before I joined Andrew's firm of one, I say that like we have 17 associates, but No, before I joined Andrew, I was at a personal injury firm. We did a little bit of plaintiff's work, but mostly I was the lawyer that the insurance company would call, right? So that's what I did. So yeah, that's where the fight happens. And but again, that's not necessarily sexy to a lot of people. You know, they want to see Travis Scott on the stand or, you know, something like that. So people don't want to see a bunch of insurance lawyers, you know, yell at each other.
Well, that is true. Your prediction is Travis Scott never takes the stand, probably doesn't even sit for a deposition.
No,
right?
Absolutely not.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
But okay. I think that he has said that he's cooperating with the investigation. So I think as far as he knows about hiring decisions and things, the minutiae of that, which are things that the insurance companies are going to want to get into, he's not going to know any of that.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some production company or something in charge of all that. Who knows?
That's who's
all right. Well, thanks for the coverage as always, Morgan. A really grim situation, but I hope the victims get some justice. I mean, again, as you say, hashtag normalize talking to your lawyer when somebody with money screws up and your loved one is killed. Like, yeah, that's fine. Go soothe the hell out of them. That's how it should work.
Absolutely. And stay safe. And I'm hoping that I can stop covering depressing pop culture stuff. I need a crazy celebrity divorce where we can root against everybody.
Ooh.
So That's what I want.
Submit Morgan Stringer pop segment ideas to openarguments@gmail.com for sure. All right. Thanks as always, Morgan.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And thank you.
And now it's time to thank our Hall of Famers, our all-time greats on patreon.com/law. And we're doing the 1 month. We thank everybody within the month. We divide it up and we are on the 2nd/4th because I'm not going to attempt to say the other words that I mix up all the time. And so why don't you start us off thanking our 2nd/4th of the Hall of Famers.
The 2nd quartile, the best quartile, includes Sparkle Donkey will host a fully stocked patron pre or post show event for charity at our Tequila Lab for a Seattle live show. Yeah. And those guys actually reached out to me via email. I've been super underwater, but I love the idea. And we love the guys over at Sparkle Donkey Tequila. Fred Gruthus, a gender fluid, multi-class, dual wielding blade lock fighter. 2RR enchantment, leyline text, players can't gain life, damage can't be prevented, nail the blue and black ones, and we'll move on.
This is old. Yeah. You got to update your shout out.
Listener Thomas F. Democrats should consider any major losses as permanent for 2 undermining elections and be prepared to defend themselves or, and then it trails off, but, you know, or bad things are definitely going to happen. I liked my pork streaks paired with Casa Agria at Casa Agria and at Emperor's Brewery Beer. Lee Sharp, GDT says, everyone knows that the police can arrest you without page 2 of 2, your consent, maritime laws, freedom menu. Thomas Kleberg. Benghazi and the buttery mails. Storm the Fort teaser for Hall of Fame shoutouts. Supreme Court justices should have 18-year term limits, and so should Conrad Michaels. That's a big negative to both of those. Le Deux, lesbian, fabuleux. One more voter suppression bill, and I swear to God I will pull this country over. Adam Borichoff, Jennifer Chakowski, Edgy Veggie, D&D minus cameo, ? Brian K., we have legal advice if ye have coin. Do not take legal advice from a coin. India Walton should have won. Support your local progressive candidates. Agree with that. Support your local progressive candidates. Don't know the India Walton story, but
is that the socialist?
And
I don't know.
I don't know. We'll have to look. And Evie Huntington, Harvard alum, no hood. Thomas, take it away.
All right. Thank you, too. I would also like to congratulate Angus the Corgi. I watched him win in 2019 and cheered on his 2021 title defense. I enjoy mocking people who mispronounce adopted French words that mean a peculiar ability. I guess I am a fort teaser. Torsten Peel and a goat asks, wouldst thou like to live deliciously? Alpha Kenny Body. Elect Thomas Smith president, American Honky Tonk Bar Association. Angry Macface, Penelope is glad Sydney got sanctioned for Terpsichore. The Books That Burn podcast reviewing fictional depictions of trauma since 2019. If there isn't already a Darth Vader Ginsburg, I want to be Darth Vader Ginsburg, unless you want to use this as a nickname for something. Darth Vader Ginsburg. This is not the greatest voting system in the world. No, this is just a plurality. April Poff, Murray Gregerson. Can we all just take a moment and appreciate how much Thomas's intro music absolutely slaps? Oh, thank you. looks like freedom's back on the menu, boys. Changing my name to General Contact Unit Problem Child to increase the likelihood of the DVD screensaver thing. That's a fantastic crossover post. That will work. Learned hand job. The Dows.
That's also good.
Dallas DA John Cruzat owes justice to Diamond Ross. I don't know that situation, but there you go. Heath and Eli's tickle fights and HJ's. Jake, Seattle Pete, Big Gabe, owner, and my employer evilly added an MBA clause after years of active employment under threat of job termination. Wow, that's terrible. Sorry about that. But I hope you enjoy your Hall of Fame shout out. All right. Thanks so much, Hall of Famers. And we will be on the third quartile, if you say that's what it is, next week.
I do.
Sometimes you eat the bar and sometimes the bar while he eats you.
All right, Andrew. And now it's time for Thomas Takes the Bar Exam answer time. This was an interesting one. I'm curious if I'm going to continue my losing streak or if I broke my losing streak. Fork the streak.
This question was about option contracts, right? So it says on January 1, a man offered to sell his neighbor his lawnmower for $400. The neighbor was considering whether to purchase the lawnmower. So he said to the man, I can't decide whether I want to buy your lawnmower. If I pay you 10 bucks, will you leave the offer open until January 5th? So the man agrees to leave the offer open to January 5th, and the neighbor paid the man $10. Let me say, although like not with lawnmowers and amounts, that like this is a very standard contract technique, right? Like this is the kind of thing I do. I don't want to say all the time, but I do not infrequently, right? Which is, hey, we're considering X transaction. And the thing is, if you just say no, then you have to restart that process, right? There's no, you're at the point where you could accept the offer and that would create a binding contract. But if you say anything other than I accept the contract on the, you know, on all the terms that have been offered to me, if you try and change it at all, it becomes a counteroffer. And now, you know, there's no, the other party can walk, right? And change his mind,
okay.
Solicit somebody else. So the idea is, yeah, you pay some money and go, hey, you've offered me a good deal. I can't decide if I'm going to accept, so I'm going to pay you a certain amount of money for you to leave that open until a particular point in time.
And it's also, and I was then, thinking of it more from the economics of it, the time value of money. Like if somebody's like, yeah, well, but I could sell my mower today and utilize that money. There's a value associated with like delay the selling of your mower, even if you eventually are going to sell it. There is money associated with that time loss.
That's true. That is true. But primarily it is to avoid shifting the burden of establishing the contract.
Ooh, right? Interesting.
It's to say, yeah, look, we agree on all the terms. I just haven't decided whether I'm going to pull the trigger yet. I want to buy myself some time.
So that counteroffer answer A, I'll be curious to hear if I blew it and that's the answer. I don't know.
So January 2, the neighbor says, I reject your offer. And then the offeror did not take any steps in reliance on the neighbor's rejection. Then the next day, January 3rd, the neighbor said, you know what? I accept your offer after all. Is there a binding contract between the neighbor and the man? I always love it when you do this. Eliminated the no answers and went with the yes answers, either C or D.
And I'll tell you, not because prima facie I wanted a no answer or a yes answer. I didn't like the specific no answers very much.
Well, let's take a quick look. Answer A is no, because the January 3rd statement constituted a counteroffer. That would be true if this were not an option contract. But in this case, paying to keep the offer open means that that it is not a counteroffer.
Okay.
Right? So,
well, plus, what would the counteroffer be? I accept, because the January 3rd statement was, I accept your offer. I didn't understand how that could be a counteroffer at all.
I agree. I mean, usually a counteroffer gives you particular terms, right? So I don't know that I love it as a counteroffer, even in the absence of that. I'm sort of trying to expand out that answer. He's not a good answer. So you were good to eliminate.
Because he's like, I reject your offer. Counter, I also accept it. Like what? I don't know. Right.
that is true. And then B, well, you eliminated. No, because $10 is not considered to be adequate consideration to hold open an offer. Not true. And as one of the things you've learned is that it is very rare for courts to consider questions regarding the adequacy of the compensation.
Yeah.
But in any event, $10 is $10.
Yeah. That's a couple Crunchwrap Supremes. It's like five Crunchwrap Supremes somehow. I don't know how that works.
The language persists of a peppercorn, because there used to be in, you know, 13th century Saxony, the idea is if you weren't sure if there was consideration, you would write for the value of one peppercorn plus other good and valuable consideration, the sufficiency of which hereof is acknowledged by the parties. The parties hereby agree as follows. That's been replaced typically today when you say, oh yeah, put in a peppercorn. That means either a dollar or $10. But the fact that $10 can serve as a peppercorn means that it is presumptively valid to serve as consideration. And think about it the other way. Like if this were the case, like you could steal anything that was $9 or less. Right. Like, you know, I agree. You know, you sell me X. I agree to pay you $9.
Yeah. And then you're like, nah, not enough of a contract.
No. Right. Yeah. No. So B is a very, very silly answer. And you were not fooled by it. So the question is,
okay. Is
it C or D? You and the coin both chose D, yes, because an option contract can always be accepted during the time period that the offer is held open. The limitation on C was that it can be accepted during that period so long as the man did not take any steps in reliance on the prior rejection. And Thomas, I'm sad to tell you, be on guard for those always answers. This is an interesting, I think it would have been a harder question if in place of the inadequacy of consideration, you had had no because the man first rejected the offer. Right?
Yeah.
And then that would have really, I think that might have even steered you to the right answer when you're thinking about an options contract. So the first question is, you have now paid for that entirety of that time period, right? And so then the question is, can you do something to shorten that time period, or do you presumptively get all of it? And the answer is, if you cause the person, the offeror, the man in this case, to reasonably rely on your earlier rejection during the time frame, that can be the basis for a court later holding that there's no valid contract, right? So in other words, imagine a man is about to either sell you property for use as a park or is going to sell it to a developer, right? And so as part of the discussion, they tell you that the seller says, hey, I'm about to pour the concrete foundation. I'm about to, you know, bulldoze these trees and pour a concrete foundation. That's going to prevent you from ever using it as a park. So I just need to know, are you in or out? Are you going to accept my offer or am I going to sell it to somebody else? And you say, hey, hold it open until, you know, January 5th, you pay some money. Then you come back on January 2nd and say, I'm rejecting your offer. And I tell you, hey, you know that, okay, just so you understand, I'm going to have the trees bulldozed later today. And you say, yeah, yeah, sure, that's fine. I didn't intend to buy it.
Right, but you've added that step in.
Right, yeah.
If in this bar question, he's like, just making sure you mean that the window of the option is over. And he's like, yeah, that would make it an easier question if there was that. I agree.
Yeah, and so in that case, right, then the reasonable reliance by the offeror.
Nah, that's true. I should have gotten this one.
Would close the
I was thinking, what about the distinction? Like, the point that I thought that kind of confused me here is, like, every day that he doesn't accept it, he's rejecting it. Is there something different between not taking the offer versus saying, well, I reject your offer? It's just because the man could reasonably think he meant to close the option window.
I think that's right. And I thought that was incredibly perceptive because that is the reason behind the option contract in the first place, right? Like, because remember something that's not specified in the precise terms of this bar question, but is true. And I think you were implying is, if I offer to sell you the lawnmower for $400 and you just say nothing, right, I can come back to you at any time and revoke that offer, right? You have not accepted it. So your saying nothing is in fact a constructive rejection until the time in which you accept, and it leaves me free to come back to you, right? I say, hey, I'm going to sell this to you for, this actually happened with a car I just sold. I went to the dealership and was like, and they offered me a very, very low amount of money. And I said, I will sell it to you if you come up to X. And then they were like, well, we're going to think about it. We'll call you if we decide to do that. And then subsequently, I went to a certain large, no haggle used car dealership that offered me a number much greater than X. And I was like, oh, great. Well, I'm going to sell it to you. And so I called up the dealership and I was like, I revoke my offer to sell this to you at X, and then turned around and sold it.
What if mid-sentence, they're like, no, we accept.
we accept your prayers. I would love to see that as a bar exam question.
All right. Well, I think you've been very kind, Andrew, but I blew this one. I should have absolutely had it. Yeah. You're right. But I tried to get too cute.
The only thing I wanted to add is the bar exam actually loves having those kinds of questions, not with interrupting over the rejection, but with mail. Like acceptances mailed, yeah, exactly. And we've not had opened one of those and too. All yeah. of that. Yeah. Yep.
Well, there I blew you go. So it. Correct it was answer C. That was obvious. I should have gotten it. I feel really silly for having gotten this one wrong. Let's find out who the big winner is, who definitely did better than I did on this question.
Well, Thomas, this week's winner is Pope Charmides on Twitter, who writes, not A, unless counteroffer has some unintuitive definition as a legal term of art, not B, because there's no limit on the value of consideration. Put a pin in that. That's not entirely true, but it's good enough for Twitter. The conditions implied by C seem reasonably lawish, and the always in D seems vulnerable to counterexamples, so I choose C. This is a fantastic way for a non-lawyer to work through the various possibilities, eliminate, choose the best answer, and Pope, you got it right. So everyone, let's give Pope Charmides a follow. That is at Third Worst Pope on Twitter, at THIRDWORSTPOPE. And congratulations, Pope, your holiness, on being this week's winner.
Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much to Ace Associate Morgan Stringer, and most of all to our patrons. And we'll see you next time.
I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah, that's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it would be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.